Time to begin. And we have a long, hard journey today. This one today and the one next week about the war between God and Satan. We'll finish out the negative aspects of angels as we've covered them here the last few weeks. Maybe you've gotten tired of this part of it, but we'll get to the end of the road here before long. Today ties up some of the things we started last week. And so I've given you a handout today that gives you a summary of a couple of chapters of Revelation. I have been impressed in the last few years about how much of the book of Revelation is just simply misquoted, misunderstood, and misinterpreted. People make all sorts of wild suggestions from the symbolism in the book of Revelation. And it's not really, in my opinion, okay, having studied it and wrote a book about it and looked at it in detail, there's not a lot there that refers to all of this stuff we're talking about, eschatology. A lot of it's history. And a lot of it is the condition of the world from God's viewpoint. And so it does look strange to us. But we're going to look at something about demons, and the key to the understanding demons and the devil is in the book of Revelation. After all, why was it called Revelation? I mean, it reveals some things. It reveals some things that about the Bible and the history that's gone on up until that time that men just didn't understand. And God's telling them, setting them straight about these details. And the story in Revelation chapter 9 is key to understanding about demons and sickness. And so we're going to look at that in some detail. And this morning I have given you a handout which gives you kind of a summary of what happened in chapter 8. Chapter 8 and chapter 9 go together. Something that mankind has not understood, and now, if you look at the story of Noah and the ark, a lot of people think that happened maybe 3,000 years before Christ, 3,000 B.C. What they fail to understand is that those timescales are not spelled out in the Bible at all, and that actually it was a long, long time from Noah's time down to the time of Moses and Abraham before Moses. And that's where the Bible, you might recall back in Genesis, talks about Noah and the ark. And then it sort of gives a summary of the origin of the nations in chapters 10 and 11. And then it jumps in chapter 12 to Abraham. Abraham is some 9,000 years after Noah. That's my calculation of that. But the Bible doesn't tell you that. It doesn't tell you how long it was from Noah down to Abraham, but it was a long, long time. And you know that's the case because we started humanity over with how many people? 8 people. And you start a population of 8 and bring it up to something approaching 1 million people in Jesus' time. And that takes a long time under the conditions in which they were living. Now, the time before the flood, population exploded. Huge numbers of people because they lived how long? Almost 1,000 years. And how many children did they have? Dozens and dozens of children in each family. After the flood, things are hard. Families are small. It's difficult. Life is hard. There are storms. There's death. And men don't live near as long, and the families are smaller. And so it took a long time to get the population back up to what it was in biblical times following Abraham. So something happened in that interval of time, and the only other book of the Bible that tells us anything about that interval is the book of Job. And I'll mention that in a minute. So here we go with demons, servants of the devil. Where did demons come from? And there's lots of questions. And the conclusions at the bottom of your handout down, you will understand only after we look at the whole story. It doesn't come from chapters 8 and 9 of Revelation necessarily. So draw a line across there, and we'll talk about those conclusions later on. Most people understand that demons are angels who sinned. Bible tells us about that, doesn't it? That there were some angels. Think about the status of angels for a minute. Do they know God exists? They're right there in His presence, aren't they? And they know they were created. They know who's in charge. And yet some of them, under those circumstances, decided to believe a lie and follow Satan. And so the ones who followed Satan are the ones that we in the Bible, and particularly in the New Testament, call demons. So they rebelled against God and rebelled against Him knowing that He exists and living in His presence. You see, that was the big advantage of humanity. That's why humanity can be forgiven for sin, because God separated Himself from us in several ways. Not only, I don't think it's distance necessarily. He's right nearby. We just can't point in His direction. But by intervening, interposing a layer of angels between Himself and mankind, he can deal with humanity and not have to live with humanity. But that was His goal, wasn't it? The burning bush, keep that symbol in your mind. God wanted to dwell with humanity and not destroy it. The bush wasn't burned up. The bush represents Israel in that case. And so God wanted desperately to be with us because He loves us. But if He came close to us, and we're sinful, we're destroyed. And we see that again and again. Behold, we saw that in Isaiah. I'm undone because I'm a man of unclean lips, live among a people of unclean lips, Isaiah chapter 6. And people felt like if they saw God, they're dead. So God arranged for there to be some separation, but allowed us a time to learn to live, to be holy like Him so that we could live together. And that's the case in the New Testament time, isn't it? That God can dwell within us. That's been His goal all along. So, here we have the story that's given to us in Revelation, and it's a historic story. Chapters 6 and 7 have to do with the flood. And then in chapter 8, we see God changing things now with the new relationship that He has with humanity, and so we'll look at this review in just a moment. Let's look at where we started last week. There was a war in heaven. We're going to talk about that war next week. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. So the dragon had followers, you see, and they fought back, but he, that is the dragon, was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down. There's no doubt about who he's talking about here. That ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth and his angels with him. So he had followers. Where did he get them? He evidently somehow persuaded some of the angels in heaven, God's angels, to rebel against God and follow him. And that tells you something about his persuasive powers, doesn't it? How could he possibly do that? Because he is a liar. He doesn't tell the truth. He misled the angels, and some of them followed him. How many? Well, there's very little told us about that except for one obscure verse that we'll see here in having to do with the dragon, the red dragon, with the beast coming out of the sea that I told you about last week. And you'll see some more reasons why I think he was a cherub just like Satan. Now the dragon, that is Satan, stood on the shore of the sea, and he saw a beast coming out of the sea. He had on his had 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 crowns upon his horns, a very strange looking beast. Multiple heads, multiple horns. But notice he had 10 crowns on his horns. We'll see that just that makes a difference in a minute. And on each head a blasphemous name. That means he opposed God. The beast that I saw, and we talked about this last week, resembled a leopard, but he had feet like those of a bear and a mouth like that of a lion. The dragon gave, now that's, the dragon is Satan in this case, gave the beast his power, his throne, and great authority. So he's a powerful creature. Now, if you back up to the 12th chapter of Revelation, you see this interesting scenario that's sort of a summary after the history is given between chapters 4 and up to chapter 11, and Christ dies and the church is established at the end of chapter 11. He starts over with another interesting case here. A great and wondrous sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head. This woman is God's Israel. It's his. It's not his wife. It's humanity, the sum of saved humanity. Israel in the Old Testament were God's chosen people, and Israel in the New Testament is the new Israel, those who are saved. She was pregnant and cried out in pain, and she was about to give birth. And who do you suppose it was she gave birth to? Well, if you look on down, the dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that he might devour her child the moment it was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. Who's that? It's got to be Jesus, the Messiah. And so Israel gave birth, that is, the nation of Israel, the woman, and of course the specific woman was Mary. But the baby that was born was the Messiah. Now go back up and look. Another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his head. Who's that? That's not the devil, you see. That's that beast out of the sea. We just saw him. And a while ago when we saw him, he had 10 crowns on his heads, and here he has 7 crowns on his head. So what does that tell you? What do you suppose the crowns represent? The rulers, doesn't it? And actually, looking at the whole story, it's the rulers of Rome. And at the time that this dragon tried to kill Jesus, there had been 7 rulers. And who is this king who tried to kill Jesus? We've already talked about that. Herod the Great. Remember that? And so the beast represents government, pagan government. And the beast tried to kill Jesus when he was born. And so that gives you some indication that this beast was a very, very powerful creature. And even the devil gave him his power. And so he's really the sidekick of the devil and a very important person in the story in the Old Testament. But the verse I want you to see right in the middle, 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns on his heads, his tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. And scholars have wondered about that for a long, long time. But what I think we're looking at there, possibly, is the number, the proportion of angels that the devil and his henchmen here, the red dragon, persuaded to follow them in this rebellion against God. And how many angels did we say there were to start with? More than 100 million, and thousands more than that, a third of them. So there's a large, large contingent of angels that went with the devil and his beast of the sea that was his sidekick to whom he gave a lot of his power. So these, I think, are both of them are cherubim, but that's just a conjecture. You have to keep that in mind. But realize there's information here that we haven't paid much attention to, and that maybe the meaning of it is important. But the thing to remember is that there were a lot of angels that followed Satan, not just a few. A third of those hundreds of millions of angels is a large number. So there are lots of demons. Well, what does God do with them when they fling them to the earth? You remember we talked about that in Satan's case last week, that God said in many places that they had been exiled to the earth. Satan had been exiled to the earth. Where did he put him? Where did he put all of these angels that went with him? Because they were exiled at the same time. That's the verse we just read a while ago about the war. And so not only did Satan get exiled to the earth, but all of his angels came with him. Thousands and thousands of them. What are they running loose on the earth now? See, those are interesting questions we really need to address, don't we? Okay, let's see what we can find out about it. Because there's a lot first of all, in Revelation chapter 9, and let's sort of look at 8 in review. You have this on your handout. The first four, there were a series of seven trumpets that are going to sound. A trumpet announces some sort of a big event, right? Do-do-do-do-do. And so something's about to happen. And probably with the announcement, with the sounding of a trumpet, there was a prophet who came and said, if you don't repent, this is what's going to happen. And people, of course, pagans, didn't believe him. And this is the status of the earth after the flood fell into paganism right away. And we get some hint of that with the building of the Tower of Babel and a few things that we see toward the end of chapter 11 of Genesis. So there are four trumpets that sound. An angel with a trumpet sounds. There's a separate angel for each of the trumpets. Sounds four in sequence in chapter 8. And big devastations come upon the earth. Each trumpet announces a devastation, probably because of the extensive idolatry of mankind. Mankind deserted God after the flood. And God kept trying to get their attention and win them back. And so the first four devastations are in chapter 8. The first one was a violent hailstorm with a lot of lightning that burned up a third of the trees and vegetation. Would that get your attention? You watch all the news about California and their fires, and you feel bad about those people who suffer that kind of a devastation. And here was one, a third of the earth was burned up. A large volcano seems like in the second devastation, was the trumpet sounds, a mountain blew up and destroyed a third of the creatures of the sea. And have there been any mountains blown up in recent years? Not lately, but I doubt if any of you remember when Krakatoa went up. But it's been on the news. It's been on the History Channel, I think, in recent months. And it's an interesting story. I bought the book about Krakatoa. There's a couple of books about it. A large mountain volcano that builds up and just explodes. And there's tsunamis. Talk about tsunamis. There were huge tsunamis. There was one called Tonga that blew up a few thousand years ago. And maybe that's the one that this is talking about. A huge mountain cast into the sea. A large comet or an asteroid fell from the sky, the third one, and that's a fairly famous one because it has a name. It's called Wormwood. Wormwood means bitter, and it made a lot of the waters of the earth bitter, and a lot of people died because of the bitterness in the water, probably toxic poisons that were brought, metals and things like that, in the asteroid that were scattered in the dust. And finally, the fourth one attacked the atmosphere. There was a devastation in which the atmosphere was full of dust and smoke or something that obscured the sun and the moon and the stars. Any of you lived through the dust storm? Remember getting up? Yeah, I did, and you did, didn't you? And there you get up in the morning and the sun doesn't come up. I mean, well, it didn't come up this morning either, did it? But it's clouds. But we aren't so afraid of that so much as we would be if we had like the Dust Bowl days. And following these volcanic explosions, sometimes the sun is obscured, and we're talking about a time when if there were a nuclear explosion, it might obscure the sky and bring on a nuclear winter. Well, something like that apparently happened, and that's the four devastations in chapter 8. They might have happened 1,000 years apart. We don't know that they came right away, but God kept trying to get the attention of the idolaters and to get them to repent. And of course, I don't think it had its intended result. Now, chapter 9 is the one we want to dwell on here for about 10 minutes. The fifth angel sounded his trumpet. And now something different happens. He said, John says, "And I saw a star that had fallen from the sky to the earth." Who is that star? That star was given the key to the shaft of the abyss. Okay? And when he opened the abyss, so the star is what? A person. A star is a being of some sort. Who would have given him the key to the abyss? Who had the key to everything? God had to give him the key, and he opened the abyss. And remember that term, what is the abyss? It's not a nice place. What I picture in my mind is something like a coal mine. And there's a shaft leading to that mine, to that dark dungeon-like area. And the shaft is in a direction that we can't point. That's one of these businesses about the fourth and fifth dimensions. So there's a key, and the devil was given the key, and he opened up the abyss, and smoke rose from it like the smoke from a gigantic furnace. Do you suppose it was hot down there in the abyss? I bet it was. I bet there was fire in there. And in fact, that may be some anticipation of the concept of fire and brimstone later on. The sun and the sky were darkened by the smoke from the abyss. So it's been opened up and out pours all this smoke. And out of the smoke, locusts came down upon the earth and were given the power like that of scorpions of the earth. So there we have the devil opening up something. Talk about Pandora's box. The devil opened up the abyss. Out of it comes smoke. Out of the smoke comes locusts. Are there really locusts? The Bible says they're locusts. People have looked at that and said, no, they're not locusts. That's a symbol of something else. No, I think it's really locusts. And let's see what they have. The locusts came down upon the earth. They're given power to cause wounds in human beings. Something like a scorpion, see? They were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any plant or tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of God in their foreheads. Did you ever try to tell a locust anything? If you set a grasshopper up there and lectured him all day, maybe Jiminy Cricket could understand. I don't know. What's with these locusts? They're given instructions about not only not what not to harm, but also to determine whether a person has had the mark of God, the seal of God on his forehead. Can locusts do that? See, that's where people get in trouble with it. The locusts out of the abyss are infested with demons. Get the idea here? That what God did with the demons that followed Satan when they were cast to the earth was he stuck them in the shaft, put them in the abyss, and sealed it over. They couldn't get out. So the demons are in the abyss. The devil finally sets them free. But God gives them some limits. He lets them roam the earth if they want to, but they're not allowed to attack his people. You get that? If they had the mark of God upon your forehead, that would indicate you were following God. The symbolism is the same as it was back in the seventh chapter of Revelation, and other places in the Bible it talks about God placing a seal on the redeemed. And so it's the case even today. Why on your forehead? It's your belief system, isn't it? Your faith, your brain, your thinking. And so that's what we're talking about here. And here we have some locusts who can tell the difference between the righteous and the unrighteous. That means there's some discerning being inside of the locust. How many locusts? We're going to see in a minute that there's 200 million locusts. that's lots of locusts if there's a demon in every one of them. And so they get out in these locusts. Now, how are they going to harm them? They were not given power to kill the people that they attack, but only to torture them for 5 months. You can stand anything for 5 months, can't you? Well, I'm not so sure. 5 months is a long time, isn't it? But torture. And the agony, let's see how they were tortured. The agony they suffered was like that of a sting of a scorpion when it strikes a man. So what did it cause? Some sort of a wound on them, didn't it? During those days, men will seek death, but they'll not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them. Are they really suffering? They really are, aren't they? That's pretty bad when, Lord, I can't stand it anymore. Please let me die, is their plea. Well, how do locusts cause that kind of disease in a human being? Well, they're simply carriers of Satan's new invention. His new invention is germs. You see, before the flood, men didn't get sick. They lived 1,000 years. They died, wore out probably, before they died in their 900s. But now, man no longer has that perfect immune system that he was created with. He's suffered some mutations and things like that in his genetics, and he lives in a harsh world, and he gets injured more. And so now he's subject to disease. And so they don't live as long. Humans don't live as long. And Satan invents a bug, something like Staphylococcus aureus. And these locusts, all they have to do is just contaminate the food supply. And as they go harvest the wheat or whatever it is they harvest, they get it on their arms and legs, and boils come up upon them. And so it's, the analogy with the scorpion sting is pretty apt. And so now they get sick. But Staph aureus won't kill you necessarily. It just makes you miserable. And that brings us to the case of Job. Remember what happened to Job? When the devil wanted to attack Job, he had to go ask God for permission. You remember that? In the early chapter of Job? And when Job got sick, his friends were dead certain that he had done what? That he had sinned. And because of this distinction between the righteous and the unrighteous, that's probably not unreasonable if that happened at about this time when Satan unleashed disease upon the earth. So I think this is where it all started. The locusts looked like horses prepared for battle. Now we have to move along here and get this covered. On their heads, they wore something like crowns of gold. I'll show you that in a minute. Their faces resembled human faces. Their hair was like women's hair, and their teeth were like the lion's teeth. They had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the thundering of many horses and chariots rushing into battle. They had tails and stings like scorpions, and their tails, they had power to torment people for 5 months. And I think you look at the tail of a grasshopper, it has a couple of pointed appendages there. It looks kind of like a scorpion. They had a king over them, the angel of the abyss, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon and in Greek Apollyon. And both of those words mean destroyer. No doubt we're talking about the devil. The king of the demons who occupied the locusts. The first woe is past. Two other woes are yet to come. And let's talk just a moment about grasshopper biology. What's happening here and what's described wouldn't have meant anything to people in the past, but in the last 100 years or so, we've finally broken the mystery open about plague locusts. The locusts, these are immature on the left and the right. Mankind thought they were separate species. But the ones on the left that are green, the wings aren't grown out on this. These are young ones. Are the solitary locusts. They live. They hardly do any damage at all, and you wouldn't even notice them in your yard until they flew when you ran the lawnmower over them. And so but they don't live in this country. These are Asiatic locusts. And when the population suddenly explodes, this is Schistosuchia circa gregaria. When the population of these locusts suddenly explodes because of warm rains and good weather, then suddenly you have millions of them rubbing shoulders with one another, and within a few hours they change from what's on the left to the gregarious locusts on the right. And gregarious, you know, that's where we get the word, isn't it? That word was used for the name of these locusts. When they get together in swarms like that, they change color, and now they're red and yellow and black or purple. And you can see the crown and the inset in the upper right on their foreheads, something like a crown of gold, and it fits the picture of the locust. Now, when they grow up, they look more like this, and you can see the wings of one of them. They can fly hundreds of miles up in the wind and stay aloft a long time. And the herd of locusts, the swarm of locusts, leaves its breeding grounds and spreads all over, and it eats everything in its path. And if you go to the book of Joel in the Old Testament, it describes a locust swarm that destroys everything as God sends the swarm upon Israel because of their idolatry. And that's what it looks like as the swarm comes. You can imagine what that's like. I don't know if any of you have ever been in something where there are bugs all over you everywhere you go, but that's pretty interesting history. And the biology was only understood in about the 1930s that they finally figured out what was going on. So they eat everything. Now, not only will the humans starve, but all the cattle will starve. All the sheep will starve because there's not any pasture. And so God made it okay for you to eat the locusts. And you can eat them for a while till they're all gone, and then you don't have anything to eat until the grass begins to grow again and the crops begin to yield. Okay, so here's the picture. The sixth angel blew his trumpet, and I heard a voice coming from the horns of the golden altar that is before God, and it said to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, "Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates." Down in the bottom in Joel 1:4, you see, he talks about Israel's view of the locust. There are four kinds: the cutter, the swarming locust, and the locust larvae, and then the stripping locusts, which follow. And so these are different forms of the same locust. And I think that's what the four angels, their message, you don't think of locusts as being messengers, but the message here had to do with idolatry. Anything can bring a message, can't it? So the four angels who had been kept ready for this very hour and day and month and year released to kill a third of mankind. Now we're going to get a lot of death. The number of the mounted troops was 200 million. And that's not really the biggest locust swarms that are known. Some of them are in the billions. And he didn't count them, of course. John says, "I heard their number." And so we know that the mounted troops here doesn't have to do with soldiers. There's not that many people on the earth before the time of Christ. So here's the description. The horses and riders I saw, he doesn't mention the riders except right here. So the horse is the locust. The rider is the disease. I saw in my vision looked like this. Their breastplates were fiery red, dark blue, and yellow as sulfur. The heads of the horses resembled the heads of lions, and out of their mouths came fire, smoke, and sulfur. And a third of mankind was killed by the three plagues of the fire, smoke, and sulfur. So those are plagues, you see, came out of their mouths. The power of the horses was in their mouths and in their tails, for their tails were like snakes, having heads with which to inflict injury. The rest of mankind that were not, now here's the point of it all, the rest of mankind that were not killed by these plagues still did not repent the work of their hands. They did not stop worshiping demons and idols of gold, silver, bronze, stone, and wood, idols that cannot see or hear or walk. Nor did they repent of their murders, their magic arts, their sexual immorality, or their thefts. Nice people. Aren't you glad we don't live in a culture like that? And sometimes we think we do, but really we don't have the kinds of problems that... And you can see why God was so angry with these people. And he released these swarms. But now remember, those locusts contain demons. Does God use evil, Satan and demons, to punish evil humanity? I think he does. And there are many examples of that, I think, in the Bible, that if you choose to follow the devil, you'll reap the devil's reward. And so we'll kind of keep that in mind. Okay, now we got about 10 or 15 minutes now to look at demons. Here, I think, is the origin of them. They came out of the abyss, and they occupy living things. They start out occupying humans. But they need to get into something living. Let's see how that works. Consider the people of Israel. I want to make a comment here about from the New Testament. They do not those who eat the sacrifices participate in the altar. He's talking about the priests. Do I mean then that a sacrifice offered to an idol is anything, or that an idol is anything? No, but the sacrifices of pagans are offered to demons, not to God. And so when you offer a sacrifice to Satan, to demons, you see, you're opposing God the way they oppose God. And that's part of the war between God and Satan. I do not want you to be participants with demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. Two, you cannot have a part in both the Lord's table and the table of demons. And so the demons, you see, have a very close connection with idolatry. So we'll keep that in mind as we go along. But the one we want to focus on is the connection between demons and illness. See, I think in that beginning, in Revelation 9, we have the demons spreading disease sort of passively. But once they can occupy a human being, they then begin to do things more directly. So Matthew 8, when Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. Was there a demon involved in that sickness? Doesn't say it was it? And I don't think all sickness, even in the New Testament time, all sickness was not caused by demons, see? But people who were occupied by demons were often terribly infested with illnesses and problems. And so the very next paragraph contrasts that. When evening came, many who were demon-possessed were brought to him. And he drove out the spirits with a word and healed all the sick. And that may be two separate events there. He drove them out, healed the sick. Not all of the sick had demons, but the ones who did, he drove the spirits. How did he do it? He drove them out with a word. How is it that demons obey Jesus? We see it again and again. All he has to do is say, come out of him, and they have to do it. Why? They know who Jesus is, don't they? What does Jesus have the power to do? He could destroy them, for that matter. But what he probably does when he drives them out is sends them back into the abyss. We'll see that in a minute. Okay, this was to fulfill what was spoken through the prophet Isaiah. He took up our infirmities, carried our diseases. When an evil spirit comes out of a man, it goes through arid places seeking rest, does not find it. That's before Jesus came. He's talking about what happens. The demons wander around. He evidently wasn't driven out in this case. Jesus is talking here. Then it says, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house unoccupied, swept clean, and put in order. If you had a demon and the demon left, he's gone. And so you get rid and you sweep out the house. What was the house? It's up here, probably. And so you got rid of him. But what do you put in his place? If you don't put God in his place, he comes back. Then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more wicked than itself, and they go in and live in the empty space. And the final condition of that man is worse than the first. That's how it will be with this wicked generation. He's talking about Israel. and all of the evil. We'll go into that later on. Went down to Capernaum, a town in Galilee, and on the Sabbath began to teach the people. They were amazed at his teachings because his message had authority. Keep that in mind as he talks to a demon here. In the synagogue, there was a man possessed by a demon, an evil spirit, cried out at the top of his voice. So here we get an interchange between the spirit and Jesus. Ha! What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. How do they know that this Jesus is the Holy One of God, that he's the Messiah? Well, when he was born, you remember we talked about that, probably the devil found out about it. He probably alerted all of the demons to who this was because they had been looking for someone like this. Be quiet, Jesus said sternly. Come out of him. Then the demon threw the man down before them all and came out without injuring him. All the people were amazed and said to each other, what is this teaching? With authority and power, he gives orders to evil spirits and they come out. And the news about him spread throughout the surrounding territory, surrounding area. They sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. They crossed the Sea of Galilee. Jesus stepped ashore. He was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me. It's a demon, isn't it? For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken the chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Demon possession gave him great strength. Jesus asked him, what's your name? Legion, he replied, because many demons had gone into him and they begged him, there's more than one, see, begged him repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. So when he cast them out, I think this is the clue here. When Jesus cast out a demon, they were stuck back in the abyss and they couldn't get out once they had gone back into the abyss. Now there were lots of demons that had been released by Satan, but once they get sent back to the abyss, I think they're stuck there. The large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and the demons begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. See, demons can occupy not only people, but pigs and insects and other living things. He gave them permission, and when the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs. And then what happened? Well, the pigs didn't want them. They rushed down the hillside into the sea and were drowned. And then where did the demons go? I think they're back in the abyss. But that's just an opinion. The angels who did not keep their positions of authority but abandoned their own home, these he has kept in darkness, bound with everlasting chains for judgment on the great day. So see, this is in Jude, and there's a similar verse of scripture in 2 Peter. That points to the fact that the demons were kept bound in darkness. Satan let them out, but now Jesus, we'll see in a minute, puts them back in. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, all of his angels with him, he'll sit on his throne in heavenly glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll then put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. And down to verse 41, then he, that is Jesus, will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. That's the purpose. That was the original and probably the only purpose God had in mind in preparing hell because of the war between God and Satan. But he'll send men there too if they choose to follow Satan like the demons did. So I saw an angel coming down out of heaven, having the key to the abyss and holding in his hand a great chain. He seized the dragon, that ancient serpent who is the devil or Satan. This is in Revelation 20, and we don't know exactly when this happened. Sometime after after Jesus went back to heaven, the angel coming down out of heaven who can command the devil and stick him back into the abyss, it's got to be Jesus. He's going to be there for 1,000 years. He threw him into the abyss and locked and sealed it over him to keep him from deceiving the nations anymore until the 1,000 years were ended. And that's what Satan was good at, deceiving whole nations of people with paganism. After that, he must be set free for a short time, and we must fear whenever that happens. I don't know if it's happened already or will happen in the future. But in 1 John, John comments on this idea. Dear Jesus, dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. He who does what is right is righteous, just as he is righteous. He who does what is sinful is of the devil, because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. And then the key sentence here, the reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. And so you could read that as to put the demons back into the abyss. But of course, we have to work along with Jesus as his people to keep that approach clear as to what's right, what's wrong, so that the devil doesn't get followers out of humanity. So here's your conclusions, the list that you have. And I think they follow from all of the things we looked at today. Demons are angels that followed Satan in his rebellion. Demons were exiled to earth with Satan. Demons were locked away in the abyss for a time. Demons were freed by Satan, who was given the key. And the reason why God did that, of course, was because of the evil already in the world. He was trying to awaken the idolaters. So the locusts from the abyss were infested with demons. The locusts were carriers of disease that caused boils. God changed the locusts to allow them to swarm, and the purpose of the plagues was to counter idolatry. Demons possessed people who rejected God in their lives. I don't think demons could infest a Christian who opposes Satan. But if you choose to do evil, then that would have been a possibility. I don't know that demons are out there, and we'll talk about that when we talk about the question of do people see angels today. But not all diseases in Jesus' time was caused by demons. And Jesus overpowered Satan and put him in the abyss, but Satan's going to be released before Jesus returns, and that's something we need to be well aware of. Okay, now I see some questions on some faces, and we don't have time for it today, and maybe we need to take some time, and I think we can next week spend some time with questions. So write down if you have a question, and we'll look at that next week. Thank you very much. Good morning.